morning was a feisty, loving, and giving woman who I so adored. She was one of those people that you just felt better being around. She was 30 years older than me, and I often told her I wanted to be her when I grow up. She loved fully, and she loved fiercely. She was a strong, independent woman. She had a big family with 8 children who visited her often, and they all trusted her advice and counted on her love and friendship throughout the years. Sometimes, during our visits, she would mention her granddaughter, Cindy, who she loved deeply. Cindy had recently divorced her husband. I never got all the details about why, but in this leaving, Cindy had begun to change. She was discovering things. She was finding joy. She was even starting to date again. Of course, divorce is never easy, and there were 2 young children caught in the middle of divided parents. Lorraine shared with me that she really wanted to sit down with her granddaughter and set her straight on all of this. She wanted to caution her and to remind her about her duties as a mother. Lorraine worried about these great-grandkids who now, in her estimation, were coming from a broken home. Time and time again, Lorraine would tell me how she was working hard to get Cindy to come over for this talk. Cindy dodged her invitations, perhaps aware of their hidden offering. As Lorraine's health began to decline, she felt more desperate to make this conversation happen. And one day I wondered aloud with Lorraine, as you're getting closer to end of life, is this really the way you want to be with Cindy right now? Telling her what to do, letting her know that you're disappointed in her? Silence held the room. After a few minutes, it was clear that this question opened up a truth for Lorraine. You see, Lorraine had divorced her husband too. She knew the challenges and difficulties of raising her children almost single-handedly during a time when divorce was still a rarity. She recalled the shame she felt. She recalled the rejection of friends and even some family. Finally, she spoke. No, this is not how I want to be. Weeks later, when we visited again, she told me she had seen Cindy and that they had had a wonderful visit. Instead of trying to fix Cindy's decision, Lorraine was able to sit next to Cindy in her sadness and her loss of her marriage. Lorraine listened with an open heart, as she had been in a similar space in her own life. Lorraine connected with remembrances of herself as a young single mother. Cindy was able to share her heart, and Lorraine was able to hear it and hold it with tenderness and with love. There was no judgment, there was no fixing or solutions found in their time together. Instead, a sacred space was created in which these 2 women shared a common truth. This was empathy. As many of you know, I'm a hospice chaplain, and you'd think that after all of my education and training and years of experience that I would have empathy down pat. But the truth is that empathy is difficult to grasp and unfold. Empathy means being comfortable with the uncomfortable. And while most of us, including myself, are not comfortable with the uncomfortable, let's be honest, it feels better to offer advice or do something when we are face to face with our loved ones who are hurting. Pat answers like, everything happens for a reason, or whatever doesn't kill you makes you stronger. Or as we saw in the video, at least. Counselor and writer Shaz Khan says that actually these sayings offer no value to our loved one's feverish and wandering mind, and they offer absolutely no consolation to the aching heart. Because here's the honest truth. You and I, we are in no position to even to begin to understand the lessons others will learn, nor can we lessen their pain along the way. But we can listen without being instructors. We can empathize without being saviors. Let me say that again. We can listen without being instructors, and we can empathize without being saviors. My own heart lets out an enormous sigh of relief when I hear those words. A sigh of relief for me when I'm in need of empathy, but also when I'm offering empathy to others. Empathizing asks us to feel the struggle of others and then just to hold it. When our focus is to ease our loved one's suffering, that becomes a response based on our own ego. We want to fix it. We want to change or help or stop the pain. But in doing that, when we think we are enlightened enough to correct someone else's journey, like Lorraine thought she should do for her granddaughter, we miss the point and the purpose of empathy. Dr. Brené Brown's beautiful video tells us that the best thing we can really do is to admit to our loved ones that we don't even know what to say right now, but we're glad to be with them in their struggle. That seems so counterintuitive to do nothing, but when you open up that space and it's offered with grace, empathy is a profound and holy gift. A fellow chaplain told me that one of his most amazing days at work was a day when he said practically nothing at all. A large family had camped out in the waiting room of a hospital as a loved one was having very serious and life-threatening surgery. There was nothing anyone could do to influence the outcome. Even the surgeon shared his doubts and concerns. As the family waited, my friend got them coffee and fruit. He got blankets and magazines. He drew crayon pictures with the young children who were there with their parents. He listened as they shared their concerns and tears and fears. And he held their hands. And they waited. Finally, after 6 hours, the surgeon emerged from the OR. It had gone okay. There was still a lot to learn as the patient would wake up and as healing would begin. But overall, the surgeon felt hopeful. The family fell on each other in tears of relief and joy. The chaplain helped them to pack up their stuff so they could go home and get some sleep. The wife of the patient hugged him and told him what a difference his presence had made for them on that day. My friend marveled at the fact that he really didn't do much at all. His words or actions didn't fix anything. He simply stayed with them in their discomfort. Being with someone in their discomfort. I think many of us long for this, as when we are in discomfort, we often isolate ourselves. But empathy fuels connection. And as I spent the last couple of weeks pondering this topic, we had some very public suicides occur. This congregation, too, over the years has had some beloved members who have completed suicide, and many of us know someone who has chosen this desperate and devastating choice. I wondered about empathy and what kind of role it may play for those who we love who struggle with anxiety and depression. How often have we said, well, at least, or you should? How often have we listened? I'm not blaming any of us for the choice that someone else makes when they attempt or complete suicide. I know from my training and education that sometimes there is nothing, absolutely nothing, we can do when mental health challenges dig down deep into the lives of our loved ones. And if you're sitting here today feeling you need desperately to receive empathy, please, please contact Reverend Christina or our pastoral care team. They're here to hold you. They're here to be here for you. Brown says that to know pain is human. The need is human. Many of us are willing to extend a helping hand, but we're reluctant to reach out for help when we need it for ourselves. It's as if we've divided the world into those who offer help and those who need help. But what happens when the helpers need help? What happens when the ones who need help are drowning in despair? Brené Brown says, the truth is that we are both helper and in need. Need is one of the most beautiful and holy compacts between humans that exists. To strengthen that compact, how powerful might it be if we just simply listen to one another? It feels like as a society we have lost the art of really listening. We have become a society of folks who just like to tell. Our daily news feeds are a perfect example. We face one another with thoughts and next words in our hands, positioning our tongues to leap forward as soon as the other pauses to take a breath, waiting for a chance to jump in and say what we think. As NPR host Celeste Headlee says, we become two people just shouting out random thoughts at each other. This isn't listening. So how do we change that? How can we listen with empathy? When someone is expressing pain to you, the first thing we need to do is listen fully. Put the phone away. Turn off the television. Sit face to face and be present in that moment. I'll tell you a little secret. Through the years, I've learned a magic word that people inevitably say when they want to tell you something important. People will often start that conversation or confession with the word, so. If someone starts a sentence with that word, drop whatever you're doing and give them your full attention because they are getting ready to share something very important. This is especially true for teenagers. I must confess that even adults say it too. When I'm really listening, my whole body faces that person and I lean in towards them and I focus my eyes on their eyes and I never waver to look away. Some folks say that we should repeat back what we hear the person saying to show that we're really listening, but the truth is, there's no reason to show that you're paying attention when, in fact, you truly are. The body naturally turns towards someone. Our eyes can't help but look at the ones we love. Listening well requires setting aside of yourself and focusing on the other. As they talk, and believe me, they will, just listen. Don't start thinking of the next thing to say because that's usually what we do. Stephen Covey says that most of us don't listen with the intent to understand. We listen with the intent to reply. Listen and then wait. Wait for them to ask for your input. And if they do not ask, don't offer it. Because here's the thing. More often than not, our deepest desire is simply to be understood and to be heard. It's not to be told what should have been done or what went wrong or how things could be different. True empathy allows others to express their reality, void of judgment, void of interruption. As a Unitarian and a chaplain, I'm very comfortable with folks of all walks of faith and even those who have no faith at all. I champion for my patients who say they are spiritual but not religious, and I stand up for my patients who identify as atheists. My staff can find this a little confusing sometimes. One of my nurses asked me just the other day, what do I do when I'm with patients like this who deny the existence of God? I paused. The you in me came to the fore, and I said, well, During this period of end of life, I'm lifting up issues like regrets and forgiveness and reconciliation with loved ones. We explore what gave them meaning in their lives. We work towards finding peace and celebrating love and grace. In my estimation, these are very holy aspects of anybody's life, whether they have a faith tradition or not. She brushed it off by saying, "Oh, you mean secular things." I know she's got a very strong faith that supports her very well. And I suspect the absence of talking about God at the end of life seemed almost hard to imagine. So I asked her, "Is love, forgiveness, grace, and peace secular? If I was talking about these things in connection to God, you would not say so. For my non-religious patients, these issues are just as sacred and holy in their lives. Sacredness and holiness are things that give us meaning and connection. Perhaps not to God, but to certainly something bigger than ourselves. When we're able to be present for one another in empathy, we open ourselves up to the holiness of connection with another human, to something bigger than ourselves. As a lot of you know, aging has its blessings and its challenges. And as I've been growing into my 50s, I've learned that if I share my vulnerability, my messiness, my uncertainty, my brokenness, it's actually very freeing. And I instantly build a bridge to understanding when I share my fears with others, because always, always someone will say, "Yes, I know what you mean." Because we've all been in dark places. We've all been lost and broken. When we are offered empathy, it helps us to see that we are not alone in those dark times. Empathy says, "I'm here to sit with you in this dark place." Earlier, our voices joined together as we sang the hymn, "When I Am Frightened." It's asking us if we'll sit with me when I'm angry or frightened. Will you still embrace me when I'm angry? When I'm thoughtless, will you understand? Will you believe in me? Stand by me willingly? Will you be there for me? All of us wonder if our loved ones really, really knew us, really saw our deepest thoughts, would they still be by our side? The hymn ends with the thought that if we can do this for one another, we'll learn love. The Christian faith tells us that God loves us unconditionally. I marvel at that concept. It feels so lovely, and I know I've experienced it myself from the universe at times and with people who I love in my life, but sometimes it seems fleeting. The teacher Jesus shares how we too can embody unconditional love. And it seems like something that I believe we are encouraged to strive for. The golden rule to love our neighbors as ourselves seems like an easy thing to say, but in all reality, it's not something we do easily or naturally. I wonder if the obstacle is often that we do not really love ourselves fully first. We are often our most critical judge. In turn, that same judgment that we hold for ourselves gets tangled up in how we see our neighbors. I feel like perhaps the teacher Buddha got to the core of this issue of loving unconditionally. Buddhists strive for detachment and letting go of expectation. If I have no expectations of you, if I accept you as you are, I cannot be disappointed. I can only accept you unconditionally. And I wonder if our challenge in fully offering empathy has anything to do with the difficulty of loving unconditionally. If I offer you empathy, I accept you as you are, hot mess and all. And that can be challenging and uncomfortable. like my story about Lorraine shared, her words of correction or judgment or even guidance would only have caused more separation between her and her beloved granddaughter. When she sat with her granddaughter in understanding and acceptance, in that holiness of unconditional love, they found a state of grace. Empathy fuels connection. In opening up to empathy, we open ourselves up to loving unconditionally. Connie's beautiful reflection at the beginning of the service, sharing her gift of listening to her friend Kathy's grief, allowed Connie to feel Kathy's deeply emotional year. Connie said, "We were not thinking about her life, we were feeling her life. We felt what it was like to walk in her boat boots and to see the island and the ocean through her eyes, to feel what she felt in her heart." Empathy invites us to sit next to our beloved and feel what is inside their heart. Empathy opens us up to loving unconditionally when our beloveds are lost in a dark place. We are human, you and I, and getting lost in the darkness happens to each and every one of us at times. Instead of hiding those times from one another, what if instead we used our own experiences of darkness as a doorway to light, as a doorway to understanding our beloveds when they are in those dark places? Seek that light with someone you trust if you are in need of it. Offer that light to those you love who may be struggling. For in that human offering, we find a sacred space of understanding. In empathy, let us listen and hold one another. Let us sit beside one another and physically and emotionally assure each other that no matter what, we will stay and we will be with one another in our discomfort. But when we can offer this to one another, this is the gift of unconditional love. May it be so.